Big budget films that have been gathering dust are being released soon, and patient movie fans are anxious to finally see the latest releases of Top Gun, James Bond, and the Matrix series. There's also a new Spider-Man, Space Jam, and another Dune remake, among many others. I'm David James, and next on To Main Street, my guest, movie reviewer Ted Haycraft, looks at the films that have been on hold because of the pandemic, and his recommendations for a night at the movies. We'll hear about some cult classics, obscure viewing gems, and Ted's fascination with the campy action flick, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. To Main Street at the Movies is next, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Tri-State Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is To Main Street at the Movies. Of course, it's been a tough year and a half for the film industry, theater owners, and of course, the actors and the crews that bring the magic to the big screen. We've seen some big budget films released for home viewing, but as my guests will tell you, there's nothing like sitting in a darkened theater, sharing the experience with fellow moviegoers, the smell of popcorn, the oohs and ahs, and that incredible Dolby sound. Ted Haycraft, a local movie reviewer and a repeat guest here on 2 Main Street. Ted, good to have you back here, and let's get right to the new James Bond movie. We're both James Bond fans. It's been in the can for more than a year.
Yeah, I think I wrote this down November 2019, when it was supposed to originally be out, then February 2020, then April 2020, and then November 2020, and now I think it's set for October 8th.
Let's hope so. No Time to Die.
No Time to Die, Craig Daniels' last foray as James Bond.
And it's the 25th Bond movie, I believe.
I think so, yeah. I have to do the math in my head.
I think that's what I read.
Yeah, do you like the latest Bond films?
Oh, I love them. I love them. And now Rami Malek, of course, the bad guy, villain in this one.
Mm-hmm. But from the trailer, I'm kind of thinking it looks kind of Dr. No-ish.
He does, a little bit.
Because right. there's a scene with a set design. I'm like, oh, that looks like Dr. No's hideout. And it could be because, you know, this is a reboot of Bond, so there's no reason it can't be sort of a variation, like kind of like the Star Trek is kind of. Was retreading old ground with the Chris Pine Star Trek franchise. But I also thought it's interesting Chris Waltz is going to be back as the Blofeld. They're going to confer with Blofeld. It looks like they're going to follow up right where that last one left off because he looked like he quit with the girl. And she's got some hidden something that's going to cause a big problem. And there may be a possibility of a spinoff of another 00 agent in this movie.
Oh, so
there are all kinds of things
to introduce
happening.
Maybe the new James Bond.
Who knows? There's been a lot of speculation who's going to play Bond next.
We understand the plot is that James Bond is kind of retired.
At the end of the last one, he walked off. He said, the girl at hand, looks like they were going to go have a happily married,
that's right.
a happily
that's right.
ending. You know.
And then he's recruited to rescue a kidnapped scientist somewhere.
Yeah. And Felix Leiter's back. I can't think of the actor playing him. He's a great, really good actor. He was always his CIA agent that he always contacts.
And Billie Eilish sings the theme song.
Which has already won a Grammy Award. They actually released the song. I was looking that up last night. I forgot about it. I had to go look. I watched the music video last night. It's a music video for it, and it's already won a Grammy, so it's already primed and ready to go, you know.
And some interesting comments from some Bond fans I found. Somebody said, "No Time to Die, No Time to Release." And says all the stars have their original hair color. No Time to Die, DYE.
Cute.
This film has been pushed back more than my hemorrhoids. Release this film soon or it will be a period piece.
Yeah.
I like that one. And not getting any younger, Mr. Bond.
It's going to be interesting. and it's a franchise that won't die. I hope it keeps it going. It's interesting, too, you know, because they always thought, you know, a lot of the feminism came along. They got made M. Judy Dench, you know, and then Bond can't thought maybe Bond's a misogynist dinosaur. I think that's what she called him, and so it's the world that he's, you know, it's modified. Used to be the Bond films used to lead the way in franchises and action films. Now they're kind of behind the ball sometimes. You know, when the Bourne Identities, Bourne films came out, or the Die Hards came out, they were taking pages from the Bond film, but they were advancing it, and so Bond had they had to kind of play catch up at some point.
Just think of all the Fast and Furious movies, too.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh, they crank these things out.
F9, June 25th. David, I have people will think, well, you're some movie reviewer, Ted. I have not seen one of them.
Really?
I have not seen one of the Fast and Furious. I'm not anti-Fast and Furious. I don't know. I think originally, you know, it was like some of the stars, and I was a lot of CGI cars as opposed to a like real car.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
I don't know. I just didn't get excited. But as any franchise, like we'll talk about other franchises too here probably, they started gathering people. I think Kurt Russell's shown up in them. I think Helen Mirren has shown up in one of the films. They keep on adding, and they even got spinoff films, you know, and all the big guys, Rock and John Cena, and everybody's showing up in these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So other big films that have been on hold too, Mission Impossible.
Yeah, and I think Tom didn't he get a wound? Didn't he get bumped his knee again or leg?
He jumped to like a.
Or was it the last film? I'm getting him off.
Jumped from like one building to another or something, banging himself up.
Yeah, that might have been
up.
The last film or this one. I don't know.
Well, he's got Top Gun too.
Yeah, I knew. Last time I was when we talked about our favorite top tens, you mentioned you'd like Top Gun a lot, so I'm sure you're excited to see that.
But these have been gathering dust.
Oh yeah, we got. What else? Oh, in The Heights, the Hamilton. Yeah, that's been sitting around for quite a while.
Kind of an homage to West Side Story.
It's a new musical from the guy who did behind Hamilton. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. I'll mess it up.
Miranda.
But it looks like it'll be a lot of fun. What else is? Yeah, there's a. Oh, the Beatles film, Get Back. There's a Peter Jackson of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit director. He did that documentary of World War One footage, and they colorized it and made it look like, you know, almost pretty, almost like.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Right. I forgot the title of that film off the hand. But it did so well that I guess the people from the Beatles Corporation came to him and said, hey, here's all this footage from the Let It Be movie.
Oh.
And just, you know, where can you make work your magic on this? Because, see, I think Let It Be is their last film. It shows a little bit of them arguing in a little bit of a downbeat sort of a way, and Paul and Ringo are not so happy that maybe that release it's because it's not officially available anywhere at this point right now. Mm-hmm. You got to get a bootleg of it. So this is going to be like the positive happy Let It Be. So Peter gets to go through all this footage and make a whole new documentary musical concert. What do you want to call it? Film. And that'll be out in August, I think.
Oh, that's going to be neat too.
Yeah, there's nothing like. I just remember the nights of packed houses on Friday. I mean, go back to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah.
The opening night, I think Friday or Saturday night, you're in there. The theater is sold out. It's packed. And that boulder comes rolling down at the beginning. We had not seen anything like that. And I swear the house, we all went crazy. I mean, people were screaming and laughing and hitting the roof. And it was just amazing. And there's nothing like that feeling and that shared feeling. Mm-hmm. You're in the dark. You're concentrating. There's no distractions. And you're all in line. Of course, now there could be the bad distractions of people, you know, eating too loud or talking through the movie. And some of that has increased.
But, you know, if the movie's really good, nobody's doing that.
That's true. Exactly.
They are wrapped. Their attention.
I was interesting. I was reading an article. Paul Schrader was interviewed by New Yorker, the filmmaker Paul Schrader. He did American Gigolo and wrote Taxi Driver, and he talked about how, you know, going to the theater is like you go in the church. You don't, if the sermon's boring or you're bored, you don't get up and leave. So in the theater, you know, when you go see a film, even if it's a boring film, you don't really get up and leave because you're paid your money and you sit through it, you know. But maybe it'll get better or maybe it won't. But it is an experience. You have to make a decision, a choice. Mm-hmm. You got to get off your butt and go see it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the smell of popcorn, like you said earlier, it's always something. But is it going to become a niche media? I mean, but I don't think it'll ever go away. But certainly streaming has really made a whole different world, and the pandemic didn't help much.
Sure, yeah. Now, you keep a journal of the films that you watch, And I mean, this is very impressive, Ted. I know you are the ultimate movie fan, and you had the one before the pandemic hit.
Yeah, well, what happened was I went and marked. I was looking at this, and it was March 15th of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Showplace East.
It was I don't know anything about that.
A very arty film, very good, but arty. That was the last one I saw. Speaking of which, I recommend this. I want to do some plugs here today from different things, and one of them is there's a site called Letterboxd.com. It's spelled without. Let me make sure I get the spelling right. I'm an old analog, old school guy. So it's been they're pulling me and dragging me into the digital world, out of protest. But I was doing this paper. I keep up the paper journal, but I'm also duplicating it on Letterboxd.com. It's Letterboxd. The E is missing in there, and you can go on this site. There's an app for it too, and. Log all your films, and it'll give you the date, the director, and information. You can rate it or hit like or whatever. So I'm also on there, so I'm on a community there. And by the way, you don't have to be a member to look at people's diaries. So if you want to go on the letterbox.com, type in Ted Haycraft, you can see all the weird, eclectic, strange things that I watch and keep track of me if you want, if anybody would. But it's kind of fun. So, yeah. So I keep a journal because what happened was back when I used to write for News for You, I would have to do a top 10 at the end of the year. And, of course, as you get older, you go, what did I see in January or February? So I kept that's what it was a practical reason. I wish I had started back in grade school. Because mm-hmm. I think when we – last time we were talking about our top 10 favorite films, I was trying to think, did I see this on TV? Did I see it in the drive-in? Did I – I can't remember – sometimes I can remember exactly where I saw it and, when. But sometimes it's all jumbled. Mm-hmm. So it'd been kind of nice to see which ones I saw and where I saw it. I do have, on spurts – like I have a scrapbook where I have ticket stubs. I notice I still have my ticket stub for a taxi driver, taped to him.
Ted, I love this.
Sorry. I'm rambling.
I love it.
I hope I'm not, the audience is not turned off or snoozing by
well,
now.
Well, let me reintroduce you to our audience. We're talking to Ted Haycraft, obviously a local a movie fan, Uber fan, yeah. A local TV and movie reviewer, and a TV employee working at WFIE for many years.
1980. It's been there since
1980.
Yeah, David, wow. I think we've known each other quite a while. I was in college when I first met you in 1980.
And when I was working at Channel 14, I would always monitor the wire services. Anytime there'd be a celebrity death, I'd take that off and run it back to the control room and give that
to you. Exactly. And guess what? I'm still doing that now with Facebook.
I noticed you've been putting all the Facebook
posts. I will do all the – in fact, Norman Lloyd today. We found out that Norman Lloyd passed away at 105 years old. He was one of the doctors in St. Elsewhere. He was in Hitchcock. He's the one holding on to the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, my God.
Saboteur. He worked with Chaplin. He worked with Wells. He was part of Wells Mercury Theater Company.
105.
Had great stories.
Oh, my God.
But it's funny. My best friend, Jim Alexander, we're both on Facebook, and he will post all these birthdays, whether they've passed away or not. Birthdays, celebrating these people. I'm but no bits. It's like Jim's the positive, happy guy, and I'm the doom and death guy. But, yeah, I'm doing that all the time. And if you notice my Facebook, I'll do a few pictures of them that mean something to me. It might not be the most popular film they did, but something that was impactful to me that these actors did.
Well, and that gives the people that sees that a reminder, that's that guy. Yeah. Or that's that lady that did that role. And one of their famous iconic roles, too.
Yeah, as much,
the character actors are great.
As much as I'm dragging behind the digital world, being part of the digital world is great because you get to see people that have passed away that might not have been worthy of a newspaper article, or they were worthy, but they just mm-hmm. they got bumped off, or they didn't, or right. The editor didn't know who this guy was, and all of a sudden everybody's getting their recognition, mm-hmm. whether they've done one film, two films, or the cult director, or mm-hmm. whatever they are. So it's great that I can. It gives me an opportunity to share my love for some more obscure stuff that I hope maybe people will check it out, as opposed to just the Top Guns or the Jaws or the Spielbergs or whatever, right. You know.
Of course, going back to we were talking about the new James Bond movie coming out in the fall, and of course the death of Sean Connery in the past
year. Oh gosh, yeah. I got a list of obits in my journal.
And oh my gosh,
it's so. Sean Connery, major. I mean, we're at the age, David, our heroes are dying. You know, the ones that we grew up on. And it's just really weird. Dinah Rigg, a Bond girl in Avengers.
Oh, that's right. Dinah Rigg.
And Honor Blackman, too, who was in a Goldfinger.
Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore and Avengers, too. Mm-hmm. All kinds of people. Hal Holbrook, you know, Christopher Plummer.
Oh, my God.
I mean, just if you look at his list of films, just a major, major actor.
And he was in Knives Out.
Yeah, George Segal. Jessica Walter from Play Misty for Me and Arrested Development. Interesting ones. Richard Rush, director. He did the movie called The Stuntman with Peter O'Toole. And just a really great film. He also did some other interesting films, too. Freebie and the Bean. James Caan and Alan Arkin. And Getting Straight with Elliot Gould. And he passed away recently, so that was a chance to, you know, share with people with someone like him that recently. Monty Hellman, another interesting cult director. He did a movie called Two Lane Blacktop with James Taylor and Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys, and James Taylor plays the driver, Dennis Wilson plays the mechanic. There's a girl called the girl, and Orrin Oates shows up driving a GTO, and he's called GTO. And it's really a weird existential road picture back when Easy Rider made money, so all the studios were throwing money out to let people do these artsy films. And then, of course, they quickly found out they didn't.
Well, anything with Warren Oates has got to
be
great.
It's just, this is, if you want to see a quintessential Warren Oates film, you need to see this. And the ending to the film is very existential. I don't even want to spoil it, but it's a very so cinematic ending. It's very interesting just to watch that. Monty Hellman directed that. He did a couple of westerns with Jack Nicholson early in the early 60s. He was executive producer in Reservoir Dogs for Quentin Tarantino. Very interesting guy. He's doing a Bread and Breakfast at the end of his career up in Laurel Canyon. That was what he was doing.
Oh my gosh. He had
one film a few years back, but he passed away this year recently. So it's just, you know, and so I try to call attention to that. And again, all these are directors and actors and producers that I grew up on, that the producer for the Leone trilogy, the Leone films. He passed away this last year, and so it's hitting home. It's hitting home.
Well, we're going to give Ted a chance to get some water here. He's on a roll, and we are talking movies with local movie reviewer Ted Haycraft. Coming up, we're going to get Ted's take on the Oscars, the Golden Globe controversy, and what movies and shows have kept Ted from losing his mind during the pandemic. What are some hidden gems we haven't seen that we should see? And the return of Comic Cons and film festivals? I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is local movie reviewer Ted Haycraft. As we look ahead to the release of some blockbuster movies that have been put on hold and the movie theater comeback. So, Ted, during the pandemic, what shows or movies have kept you sane or maybe driven you insane? I don't know.
Okay. Another confession, and I may be tarred and feathered for this, but I'm not streaming yet. I don't stream at home. Because I'm just a purist. I go to theaters. I have.
Well, that's a badge of honor, Ted.
Well, you know, and I have access if I need be, thanks to friends, or I can go to my sister's house, or, you know, we have viewing parties at my friends and Jim. You know, we'll watch, you know, the Marvel.
So you're not a total relic.
No. And then some of the Netflix films have showed up on DVD and Blu-ray. So I'm a collector. I love to have these things on the shelf. Mm-hmm. I love hard copies. So that's the way I go. So what happened was I almost enjoyed the pandemic. I know this sounds a heresy to say that, but for me, I was able to lock in down at home and start enjoying my library that I have amassed. Oh. Because one of the jokes about me is that, you know, all people talk about, have you seen this? I go, no, I haven't, but I haven't watched it yet. So now I started going through stuff that I wanted to see that I've had on my shelf. And that was a blessing in disguise, you know, because social distancing I do all the time anyway. So here I am at home. So I was, you know, I was watching stuff like I'll name some things and see what how you react
okay.
to them.
Okay.
I Walked the Line, okay. Gregory Peck with Johnny Cash music.
Oh, my gosh.
The Gypsy Moths, Gene Hackman, early Gene Hackman, and Scott Wilson, about these traveling guys that do those parachute shows, you know, in small
wow.
towns across the Midwest and stuff.
Like barnstorming.
Yeah. That was from 19 well, I wasn't writing down the years then. I start writing down the years for these things. The Train with Burt Lancaster.
Yes.
Frank
yes.
John Frankenheimer. Hot Rock, Robert Redford, a heist film. That's real, a lot of fun. Zero Mostel shows up in it, and okay,
Diamond,
George Siegel's in that.
Diamond Pass. Theft.
Yeah, it was. Rock, yeah, yeah. It's a yeah. it's a diamond. Yeah, diamonds. Harper with Paul Newman.
Okay.
And detective film. Fantastic Voyage, where they shrink them down. Raquel Welch in a tight a scuba outfit, and they Stephen Boyd, and they go inside a body.
I remember that. Yes.
Miami Blues, the really small film that has. Alec Baldwin and Jennifer Jason Leigh. It's just a little low-rent gangster film. George Armitage is the director, mm-hmm. I believe. Jonathan Demme was the producer. Rabbit, an early David Cronenberg film, where a porn star Marilyn Chamber plays this person who gets infected and a disease starts. And that's literally Cronenberg films always have dealt with disease. Born Free. You know, Born Free is one of those films that, you know, have I seen that? Did I see it as a kid? I've seen clips. I have the soundtrack. John Barry won an Oscar. And then I finally said, well, I got a Blu-ray now of it, so I'm going to sit down and watch the dang thing. So a lot of these things, I'm just solidifying things that maybe I almost read about it, saw it, maybe portions of it, or was too young to really appreciate it. So I was just going crazy with that kind of stuff. And I just kept on going, you know.
Let me throw a couple sure. at you too that I've been watching.
Okay, good.
I have Amazon Prime because my wife gets free delivery now with her purchases, so that comes with it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So I've discovered some classic films, QB7, the courthouse drama with Anthony Quinn.
Oh my gosh, yeah, an old TV. It was a TV miniseries.
Yeah, it was a TV miniseries, yeah. And they've put it together as a film, different segments. Really incredible stuff, right. And Ben Gazzara's in it. And it's really well done, and it was big
at the time.
Made headlines. Yeah. And the Wild Geese 1 and Wild Geese 2. Wild Geese had Richard Burton in it,
yeah.
And Richard Harris, and they're like mercenaries.
Yeah, it's longer than two. They were these guys. It was, let's see, I can get this right. Richard Burton, Richard Harris, Hardy Krueger,
yes,
and who's the fourth one? There's four of them.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. You know, but I saw that at the theater. You know, I'm a big Richard Harris fan, and Burton, I can come and go on him. But they were all long in the tooth. Their careers were on the down, going on. So, you know, they were, it was a chance for them to be, you know, a headline of a movie. And you can imagine the boozing going on that set. Because they were known boozers.
And you have Richard Burton huffing and puffing,
yes,
in this thing, running from gunfire.
Right.
And you're thinking, oh, he's going to have a heart attack,
exactly,
here. But it was a good movie. It really was.
Now, Wild Geese 2 is like, that's a whole different cast, I think, isn't
that
it?
That was Scott Glenn.
Scott Glenn, yeah.
And they're rescuing Rudolph Hess from Spandau Prison.
Yeah.
And that's a strange movie, but it was action-packed.
Right.
It was like about 7 or 8 years later after Wild Geese 1.
Okay.
Yeah. But it had a lot of interesting locales and everything, and that was a good movie, too. I like it. And I another one I discovered, Lion of the Desert with Anthony Quinn.
And Oliver Reed, right?
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Oliver Reed was like the
Mussolini,
chasing him.
The Italian
commander.
Commander, right.
And a great, it was almost like a, you know, like, this is this desert drama, you know, and just widescreen stuff.
Yeah, that's the beauty of that, of having these streaming services and these kind of films, because I don't think it got good reviews at the time, and you know, and maybe you were busy during that, you know, when it was at the theaters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a chance to catch up and be like, oh, I never did see that, you know, let's watch that, or check this out, you know. And that's what I'm doing with my Blu-rays and DVDs. But yeah, the streaming services, I just say it's almost overload because there's so many options and so many choices.
And I'm trying to think who played Mussolini in that. Was it Steiger, I think Rod
Steiger. Oh, that sounds right. Yeah,
I think probably. He played Mussolini.
He might have played him more than once, but yeah. Yes, that would be appropriate.
With a puffed out chest and everything.
And that would and Steiger's so hammy that he would really dive into
very
that.
Good.
So they won't. I'm curious. Have you seen any of the Marvel movies?
Yes, I have.
Have you kept them with all of them? Or?
No, Aquaman?
No, that's DC.
That's DC.
Yeah, we'll get to DC in a moment.
Okay, but, well then.
Marvel, Captain America.
Yes, I've seen
Spider-Man.
That. Yes.
Did you see the big climax, the end game in Infinity War, where the giant film where they all came together and fought?
I've seen
Thanos.
Parts of that. I don't follow it as closely as I guess I should.
Well,
pop
it's,
culture.
Well, what's interesting, okay, like I said, I could spend a whole hour. This is like a 2 or 3 hour talk to get on this because I'm a Marvel kid. I'm what they call Marvel zombies or whatever. I was there. I'm old enough to be there when Stan Lee was still editor of the comic books, and Jack Kirby was drawing them and mostly writing them, more so than Stan. That's a whole other controversy, but that's been resolved legally, sort of. And Steve Ditko was the guy who did Spider-Man, but he had left Spider-Man by then. I was seeing this universe being built. What was unique about the Marvel comics in the 60s were you all of a sudden you had heroes that had feet of clay, and they argued, and they had emotions. You know, basically, if you were reading DC at the time, they were all Boy Scouts. If you read their dialogue with your eyes shut, they all sounded, Superman sounded like Batman, Batman sounded like Green Arrow. There was no difference. Over at Marvel, Ben Grimm with the Fantastic Four, or Peter Parker, Spider-Man, it's a teenage voice, and Ben Grimm's is Brooklyn guy that's mad at everybody because he's turned into a monster. And so there was this, you know, that was one big thing. Stan set the thing in real world New York City. They didn't use Metropolis or Gotham City. It was real city. So then as a kid, you'd think, oh, wow, New York, you know, Spider-Man swinging around New York City. And then they crossed over. They, you know, if something that happened in Spider-Man might affect the Avengers or Fantastic Four, or they would meet each other, they would fight, or they would misunderstood each other, or they would team up, or the Hulk is on a rampage, so everybody had to get together and go, we got to get the Hulk calmed down, you know. So that was all this excitement. When I was part of that as it was building in the 60s. So now they kind of captured that genie in a bottle and put that in the Marvel Universe movies. Because basically, you almost have to watch every one to really get the full impact. I'm curious to see if people just drop in on one or two and if they work.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a really crazy example. Now they've branched out into TV, and they're doing WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Okay, if you watch WandaVision, they brought in three characters as main three characters outside the first two leads. One was a character in Ant-Man movies. Another character was from the Thor movies. And then a third movie was from the Captain Marvel movie, grown up as an adult. She was a little kid.
Oh my.
So can you imagine, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is so intricate. And the continuity is so tight. And they're planning ahead. There's an alien race in the Marvel Universe that can disguise themselves. So, and we find that out in Captain Marvel, which took place in the 80s. So there's a good chance that some of the movies we've seen was not like that wasn't really Ant-Man. That could have been a Skrull the whole time. They're going to reveal that as the movies go down.
There's no end to this stream of movies.
And it's going to be a really interesting experiment because actors leave contractually. Robert Downey Jr. is not going to play Iron Man anymore. You know, Chris Evans wants to stop playing Cap. Actors unfortunately pass away.
Mm-hmm.
People get older, how fast does the universe age in these movies? So it's going to be interesting to see how they play with this. They're already starting to play like a replacement for Iron Man and a replacement for this, and then Spider-Man's still under a different studio, but they've worked that out. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play out. And you talk about how the audiences now today have really gone for the episodic viewing and streaming. The Marvel Universe films, they're episodic, but they're just on feature film size. But now they branch out to TV. By the way, I just got to say this because my friends had a kick out of me reacting to this. on the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I want to make sure I say her name right. I always mess it up. Julia Louise Dreyfus from Seinfeld showed up in it. And not only did she show up in it, which is really cool, because they're getting big name actors in these things, the Marvel Universe. She shows up and she's playing a character from this beloved Nick Fury comic book in the 60s. She's got a real long name, but her short name is called Val. They're dredging up these obscure characters and B-level people. Like, nobody knew the Guardians of the Galaxy. Iron Man wasn't really that big a character. Now everybody, I see, you know, middle-aged ladies wearing Iron Man T-shirts and Denny's, you know. And I'm like, what? You know, you never would have saw that before, you know.
So. We're talking to Ted Haycraft, local movie reviewer, and we are on a roll, folks. And I want to ask you about, I love Jurassic Park, the whole series of movies.
Right.
And there's a new one coming
yes.
out.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's continuing the newest ones, isn't it? I think the continuity. I did go see the last one. I'm getting a little, you know. I still have yet to go back and see the original third one of the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm up to speed on the new one. So,
I am just fascinated by that. I mean, the work with the dinosaurs. I mean, my gosh, they're so realistic and everything.
Well, at the time when the first one came out, that was the same year that Spielberg put that out and Schindler's List. Talk about extremes there. But yeah, it was finally we got to the point where they could do these dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, sometimes they would actually just use a lizard and it'd make it look like it was big. Or there was the great Ray Harryhausen that would do the stop motion ones that were fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was the really bad ones. I was a teenage caveman with Robert Vaughn and there'd be some really bad, these really, really bad puppets and stuff. And that you just, and now, of course, they're, because there's this whole fandom out there now. And because of Blu-rays and DVDs, these old, weird, exploitation, strange, lack of a better word, crappy films are getting respect and love and getting special editions with features and everything on them. And it's just amazing to see this happen, you know.
Well, I saw one, Llamageddon. It's about this crazed llama with an alien llama with red eyes with rays coming out of it. There's all kinds of these exploitation movies out there, but you know they have an audience. Now coming up, we're going to have kind of a fast feedback questions for Ted.
Oh,
and we're going to learn about some of Ted's favorite actors, films, and if he's a betting man, would he put his money on King Kong or Godzilla? I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you are just joining us, my guest is local movie reviewer Ted Haycraft. And Ted, before we move on, like any show, we have some plugs. And what are you plugging?
Well, I want to plug a podcast called Phi Phenomenon. Remember the show we did with you, Shane Hazen?
Sure, the film editor.
Yeah, Shane, he's actually editing right now, freelance editing, living in Evansville. And he has put together this podcast. It's up to 62 episodes now. Episode 59, Bud Bedeker. We talk about Bud Bedeker, the Evansville native.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of grew up in Evansville, went to Central High School, and became a filmmaker. And there was a new book out by Robert Knott called The Films of Bud Bedeker. So we interviewed the author and talked about Bedeker and his Evansville connection. We're getting ready to do the guy just did a book on The Midnight Cowboy, The Making of Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, wow.
We're going to interview him. We talk about obscure films and stuff. So it's phiphenomenon.com. So I recommend that. Another thing, Gold Ninja Video, talking about the exploitation films. This is a guy, Justin Declo. It's a Canadian French. So he's puts Quentin Tarantino to shame, I'm thinking, almost. He is exciting, and he's putting out these Blu-rays. And and he's not remastering them. These are like they're homemade or limited, not made. And it's like, you know, when you'd find an obscure sword and sandal film, you know, with Hercules or Steve Reeves, and you find he's putting them on Blu-ray, putting commentaries and features on them. The booklets in them are little paper, little Xerox, little stapled together booklets, as opposed to the real fancy booklets of Criterion. And I just love him. And the enthusiasm and his knowledge is amazing. He's written some books. He's got several podcasts and websites. But go check out Gold Ninja Video. You might find something really fun to look at. I mentioned letterbox.com and Cinema Check. I have a Facebook page for that. I put a lot of variety articles on there and things that I find fascinating. So you might want to check that out. Evansville Museum Geek and Comic Con. It's hopefully going to be back Saturday, August 28th, and you know they'll have some movie tie-ins, but I'll probably be doing some. Oh, I think we're going to do a panel on Blade Runner and talk about me and a few other people, so that might be fun. And then there's the Victory International Film Festival, which 2 years ago got off to a really good start, and then the pandemic came along, and so hopefully we won't lose any momentum. And that was a lot of fun, and we actually used your building here, the theater here, that WNIN, thanks to that, and it really well, and I'll probably do some talks and panels on that, hopefully. So that's September 9th through 11th, if everything goes well, knock on wood.
Now, there's a film that you keep bringing up, Buckaroo...
Bonsai. And across. Oh, actually, what do you want to? You have any?
Well, I don't know. That just.
Have you been able to watch it yet?
No, I haven't been.
I'm going to have to get you a copy.
I guess I can't find it.
It may not. I don't know if it's streaming or not. I have about five copies, different copies of it.
I've got to see.
I got a German import of it. I have a UK import. I've done talks with it
because I know you're fascinated by this thing.
There's a book coming out, and by a local native, Dwayne Todd. And he's putting out a book, and it's going to catalog all the merchandising and essays in it. We've been doing some talks at conventions on it, and he wants me to write the foreword to it. And then the guy who wrote the novel that the movie is based on, there's a new novel coming out, a sequel novel coming out in a few months, and we're all excited about it. It's more Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Well, kind of give us an idea who this guy is, Buckaroo Banzai.
If you're familiar with if Doc Savage is a good template, probably nobody remembers Doc Savage, but this guy is in a rock and roll band. He's a neurosurgeon. He's a scientist. And a few other things you want to name. Peter Weller plays him in the movie. The movie's really interesting because you got like Jeff Goldblum's in it, and Dana Hedaya, and Ellen Barkin, and all kinds of interesting people on their way up, and actors that are on their way down in this movie. And he has found this contraption to go through mountains. To take a jet car and fly it through a mountain. Drive it through a mountain, but what he does, he opens a rift into another dimension, and these aliens come down. And speaking of Orson Welles, this happened. The aliens originally came through the portal when the War of the Worlds day, when that the hoax that mm-hmm. Orson Welles did on the radio. So, and in the paperback book novel, it's so funny. There's this letter from Orson Welles, you know, disclaiming all this. You know, it's a fake because the whole point of also Buckaroo Banzai. If you get one of the DVDs. That he really does exist, and they treat him like he really does exist in the world. And it was supposed to be a big franchise, and it didn't do well. I went to see it in Tyre Haute. I don't know how I got up there to see it.
Is it campy or is it?
It's campy. It's fun. The guy who put the money up thought he wanted another Raiders of the Lost Ark franchise at the time. This is 85 when this movie came out. It's a real low key humor camp. It's got a comic book vibe to it. It's got there's a little bit of the Raiders vibe to it. There's a little bit of just a little bit of everything in this thing. It's a kitchen sink type film. Some of my fellow film fans haven't warmed up to it. They were like, yeah, it's not, but there's a diehard group and they put out a fanzine and there's a website and I could spend another hour on this, but I would try to check it out and we'll try to get you a copy, David. So next time we get together, we can see what your reaction is to this.
Now, when you watch this movie, did you find something different
every time? Yeah, all the time. There and of course, like there's like little things. There's one scene where there's the Buckaroo Banzai Institute where the Hong Kong Cavaliers all hang out at, and it's a think tank, you know, for Buckaroo and his minions, and they all and they're chasing this aliens around on the compound, and Jeff, they go by this one little hallway in this one section. And Jeff Goldblum's and Clancy Brown, I think, he plays Rawhide. They all have an interesting – Jeff Goldblum's New Jersey, and he wears, like, cowboy outfit. Buckaroo goes, we have an opening for you. He goes, oh, you do? He goes, yeah. And they're doing surgery. And he's talking to Jeff Goldblum where they're doing this brain surgery. And he goes, we got an opening. Oh, really? He goes, yeah. And he goes, can you dance? Or sing? I forgot. anyway, they're going down the hallway, and there's this watermelon sitting here within this contraption, and Goldblum goes, "What's that?" And they go, "We'll tell you later." And that's it. You know, and you're left to, you know. So there's this whole backstory, and it ends like there's going to be another chapter, and it was planned to be a franchise, but it never happened. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
You mentioned Minion. There's going to be a new Minion movie coming out.
Minions,
A new Space Jam.
Oh yeah.
Death on the Nile.
Yep.
Dune.
Oh, yeah, which is Denis Villeneuve, or whatever his he's a Canadian, another Canadian name mm-hmm. that I'm butchering. I love this guy. He did Arrival and the Blade Runner 2019, mm-hmm. whatever the new Blade Runner title is. Love this guy. He's one of the, I think he is the director now of right now, Flavor of the Month, and they give him the hand and the keys. So a third attempt at trying to make Dune. You know, David Lynch took a stab at it, and there was a TV series version.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And now here we go again. So
Also, there's a new Suicide Squad coming out.
DC. We never got back to DC. Just the short story on DC is that they just can't get their act together. We'll hope we want them to get their act together. The Suicide Squad will be really interesting. It's James Gunn directing, who did the Guardians of the Galaxy, which everybody loved that. So he's over at Marvel. He almost got his career canceled because of some tweets he did ages ago. And then Marvel kind of distanced himself from him. He got this job at DC, but now he's going to be back at Marvel, I think, another Guardians eventually. So he's doing both sides of the fences there. But, they're all over the map. The Joker movie, remember how weird and serious? Did you see that? Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, strange that is, but then you got the fun. And then you got a lot of DC. A lot of times they do it right on TV, the CW series, Superman and Green Arrow and Flash on mm-hmm. CW. You know.
Also, a Black Widow is coming out.
Finally, that's the next MCU movie. You know, as in the continuity, she's passed away, but I assume this is going to be a movie showing some of her history. But Scarlett Johansson is Black Widow.
That'll be good.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be good. And something called Jungle Cruise.
Oh, you know what that is, don't you? That's based on that ride in Disney World.
Really?
Yeah. You know how nothing's sacred anymore. You know, video games, they make movies out of. Pirates of the Caribbean was a ride, remember?
Yes.
So
yes.
Jungle Cruise, this is The Rock and Emily Blunt.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, okay, we'll see.
So there'll be hippopotami. And
yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. And let's see what else we got coming up here.
Matrix, another Matrix coming out.
That's right. Matrix 4.
Ghostbusters, Afterlife.
Oh, that Ghostbusters, Spider, another Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So, my gosh, movie fans will go nuts here.
Wes Anderson's film that's been delayed forever, The French Dispatch, with all the Wes Anderson usuals in it. You know, he's always fun to watch.
Yeah, Death on the Nile sounds good. It sounds like a nice mystery.
Did you like the reboot with Kenneth Branagh?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Hercule Poirot.
I love those.
What
I
a mustache those. He's got on him.
Definitely. Okay, we've got some fast feedback questions for you, Ted.
Okay.
Let's get through these. The actress you had a crush on as a teenager.
The actress I had a crush when I was a
probably
teenager.
Several.
I'll tell you one I had. I'll be a little offbeat. I'm going to kind of be offbeat with some of these responses. I developed a really big crush on Gene Simmons. Mm. Not the Kiss, Gene Simmons.
No.
J-E-A-N Simmons.
Yes.
She was in Elmer Gantry, Spartacus, and The Big Country. And I love those films. And she's just glorious in them. And she doesn't get the due and respect like the Betty Davises, the Joan Crawfords.
Oh, I like that.
So I to this day, I still have a big crush on her. Mm-hmm. And I think she was just gorgeous and a good actress.
Mm-hmm. An actor that you wanted to be as a teenager.
Clint Eastwood.
Definitely.
I mean, I could tell you, I think I talked about this on the show before. Where
you got a Serapi.
Yeah, I was looking for one. You know, I wanted to buy one so bad. Arts Market in the Washington Square Mall had some hippie clothes in the corner. I would go there every time we got a chance to see, is there a poncho in here? Is there a poncho? I want a poncho. Now you can get one. They have them, exact replicas on the eBay.
Of course.
May break down and buy one day just for the, and bury me in it, you know.
And get you a little cigar
there. A cigar. I always wanted the stubble. I wanted the whole, the whole outfit.
Okay. A favorite James Bond gadget.
Okay, I'm going to really be really off the beaten path on this. My favorite Bond film was Under Magic Secret Service, that really strange one with George Lazenby. It opens up, Q is showing M this new gadget, radioactive lint.
What?
So you could track. They could put it on people and track it. Of course, now they have trackers and stuff. But he goes, you know, and M goes, well, I wish we had some way to track where Bond is right now or something like that. But, Q is showing him this radioactive lid. And that's also what's interesting about gadgets. In the film, Bond thinks he resigns. He's mad at M, and he goes in his office. Bond has an office. And he opens up a drawer, and he pulls out the wristwatch strangling mechanism that was used in From Russia with Love. He pulls out the breather that he used in Thunderball and one other object too. But yeah, so you know, there's all kinds of gadgets. And I like the Aston Martin in Honor Magic Secret. It's not a DB5, it's a DB6. It's a little more slicker than the classic one.
Well, Yes. Okay, here's another one here. Jar Jar Binks, funny or creepy? The character, of course.
Dorky.
Dorky, just, there you go.
Just frustrating.
I just kind of, it's hard to warm up to Jar Jar.
No, nobody does. It's interesting, too. There's a sequence that, where he's involved with, and it's a takeoff of a Buster Keaton film where, you know, remember, there's a scene where, in Buster Keaton, I think, I forgot, Seven Chances. Is it Seven Chances? Where he has to outrun a big rock avalanche. All these boulders coming down after him down the hill, and he's dodging them as they're, you know, coming down the hill. And there's a scene where like Jar Jar's in the bubbles, and they're all coming down the hill. And it reminded me of they were like riffing off a Buster Keaton film for some reason. But I haven't seen that thing for ages. So I need to go back and see if it's really that chalk on a screen, fingernails on a chalkboard.
Definitely.
Know?
Okay, now if Godzilla or King Kong in a battle. Now they had the film.
Right? And I did go see it. That was the one that.
I don't know. I'm not going to tell people who won that.
No,
I don't even know if anybody won it.
I would want King Kong to win.
Mm-hmm.
King Kong's precious in my cinematic growing up and memories. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing beats that classic film. I don't know. The magic of that film still holds up. It's really surprising this day and age of CGI, and you can do anything. There's something still magic about that original King Kong that you just can't get. If you got a chance to see it on the big screen, it's even better.
The tension building up.
Oh, yeah.
When Kong comes through the forest.
Yeah.
And this poor woman is tied up outside this huge gate.
And I think something about this, the homemade aspect of it. You know they're doing this frame by frame, and you can see the fur wrinkle on them because that's because the fingers on the filmmaker, he's moving Kong's arm, and so it dents the fur, and that's why you see that fur wrinkle.
And the remake's good too.
Oh yeah, Jeff Bridges and Charles Grodner's in it, and John Barry score, and introduce us to Jessica Lange.
I know it.
So
that's a good one.
Yeah, but my heart's with Kong, but Godzilla's pretty powerful and pretty cold, and he's got that flame. He's got that that stuff that shoots out of his mouth.
Yeah, he's a tough character. What is your maybe your scariest horror film?
Scariest horror film.
I think Alien was mine. I think that I saw that in the theater. I kind of jumped out of my seat a couple times.
Yes, Alien would be up there, definitely. In fact, Jim Alexander, my best friend since fifth grade, he saw it before I did. I think he went up to Annapolis to see a 70mm print of it or something, and I wasn't able to go. So he actually went with me to see it because he knew. He wanted to see my reaction to it, and sure enough, when that thing busts out of that of John Hurt's chest, I mean, all hands are off. What are you gonna do? It's just like, oh man, that was pretty scary. I remember Psycho as a kid. There's all kinds of interesting little jump scares over the years that have gotten to me, but. I'm sure there's something eerie that I'm missing.
There's going to be a new Halloween film too.
Yeah, it's a follow up already. They came out with Jamie Lee Curtis. They got her back into the film, the franchise, and they kind of started from scratching with ignoring most of the franchise movies and going back to the original. And it did so well and got a good reaction that Jamie Lee's back, and Judy Greer, and the same director David Gordon Green, I think, and. Yeah,
well, that's so Halloween. That's gold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's eternal.
Don't make money. Definitely. Who would you rather have as a bodyguard, The Rock or Jason Momoa, or somebody else as a bodyguard?
I would. That's a good question. I think I would go just with those two, The Rock, because I think he's a little bit more less intimidating. Momoa is. He looks intense, Aquaman. I don't know. In fact, I'm not sure I like his version of Aquaman. That's a whole other story about DC. But anyway, I would probably go with The Rock.
Okay, there you go. Now, before we wrap this up, any a gem or two that people should probably see that maybe they don't know anything about and they'd really enjoy?
Okay. Oh, really enjoy. I was going to mention Tulane Blacktop again, but I'm not sure everybody would enjoy that. But I was surprised how much I enjoy it. I think one film that I would recommend that you'd be surprised how touching and moving it could be. It's Midnight Cowboy. It's such a flashpoint. Did you see that in the theater when you were a kid?
Oh, yes.
And you're probably the right age that it really made. I was a little bit too young when I saw that at the time. I remember the you know, they had these. You see his memory. There are like flashpoints of John Voight going to New York City, and there's something that really scarred him when he was young. And I remember the editing was so fast and ecliptical that I wasn't sure what exactly happened. And now, as I, you know, now we're so fast, our attention span, and we're so used to fast editing that you can figure it out easier. And Dustin Hoffman and John Voight are just so marvelous in this film. And you see, I think when you watch it again, you're now past the storyline. You're past the New York and the grime, the trash, and the controversial type story and everything. And you just see the friendship that they develop.
Well, that scene on the bus.
Oh, yeah.
When Ratso, is it Ratso Rizzo?
Ratso Rizzo. Yeah, I'm walking here.
Yeah, and he's suffering from some malady. And you can see the compassion in John Voight's face. It's it is a powerful movie. It really is. Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, so that would be one I would recommend. It's on Blu-ray again, finally. Another one, it's very dark, but The Parallax View from 1974.
Hmm.
Warren Beatty. Alan Jacob Pakula. It's part of his, what they call it, it's his Dread trilogy or his Dark trilogy. He did Clute, and he also did All the President's Men, and Conspiracy trilogy, maybe. But The Parallax View came out during 3 Days of the Condor and All the President's Men. Watergate was in the air. And Warren Beatty is this journalist who uncovers this conspiracy of an organization that trains assassins. And it just gets darker and darker as it goes along. And it's Beatty in prime form. The hair looks great and big, you know, the big Warren Beatty hair. And Paula Prentice is in it. William Daniels, one of my little favorite actors I love, he's in it. And it's very eerie, very moody, very interesting of its time, but yet somewhat universal, too, because we still – the conspiracy theories are flying everywhere nowadays still, so it never gets old.
Well, I've got some some movies to watch when I go home, Ted. This has been a great hour with
Is
Ted
it?
Haycraft.
That's it?
Yeah, we have run through this.
I got more notes.
We'll have to have you back. And this has been a wonderful time to look ahead to movies that are coming to the theaters. And we'll see Ted back in the movie theaters.
Please
maybe
go.
Without a mask on pretty soon.
Yes.
This has been great, Ted. Thanks so much.
Sure.
This is 2 Main Street. I'm David James. 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management.